بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد، so in our previous session we looked at hadith number 34, the hadith of Abi Sa'id al-Khudri رضي الله تعالى عنه, who said that he heard the Messenger of Allah صلى الله عليه وسلم say, whoever amongst you sees a munkar, an evil, then let him change it with his hand, and if he's unable to do so, then with his tongue, and if he's unable to do so, then with his heart, and that is the weakest of iman. So this hadith, it indicates the obligation of enjoining good and forbidding evil. So does that now mean that if you see someone committing an evil out in public, out in the streets, you see somebody, for example, drinking khamar, drinking intoxicants, can you now go and take him and apply a certain type of punishment upon him? Is that allowed? Ah. So then who is that for? For the one that has the authority, which can be either the ruler or those whom the ruler has deputized, those that the ruler has given the authority to do so. Because the Messenger clearly said, فَإِن لَمْ يَسْتَطِعْ, if he's not able to do that, if he's not able to change that evil with his hand, then let him do it with his tongue. Okay, so does that mean that all evils that occur, none of them can be changed except by the ruler and those under his authority? No. So which other circumstances can a person change a munkar physically with his hand, even if he's not the ruler, Ridwan, Ammar? Removing a harmful object from the road, that is from the shu'ab of iman, that's from the affairs of iman, from the branches of iman. However, it is not something that is considered forbidding an evil. There is a munkar that is occurring, an evil that is occurring at the hands of a people. So then somebody changes that, even though he's not the ruler. Can it occur if he sees someone drinking alcohol outside in the streets? No, he can't do that. Which situation can you, as a general Joe, change an evil with your hand, even though you're not the ruler? Musa. In your house. So for example, Shaykh Anjam, one of your family members, they are trying to harm another family member, for example. They are making zulm upon him, i'tida against him. So therefore, in that situation, you can physically stop that with your hand. Although that there is something that a person can also do in the streets. Someone's being harmed in the streets, physically being attacked. You can go and help the person in that regard. How about something that is something else, another example, yeah, something that you can do at home but you can't do out in the streets? If you have a child that is listening to music in your house and then you go and you turn off the music yourself physically with your hand, okay, that is something that may require some type of authority, some type of authority and power and ability outside in the streets. لا ينكر المنكر بمنكر. A munkar can't be prohibited with another munkar. You can't go into a place of music, whatever that type that place may be, and physically go and turn off the hi-fi system yourself. Right? Why? Because a greater harm is going to occur. If you go into a place like a bar, or for example, you turn off that music, you know what they're going to do to you. A greater munkar is going to occur. Anyway. So therefore, la yunkar al-munkar bi munkarin. Munkar isn't prohibited with another munkar. Forbidding something with your tongue, how can you do that? Forbidding something with your tongue, how can you do that? Ali. Nasiha, advice. What type of forms can that advice be transmitted? In which mediums? Just with your tongue? Verbally, okay, that's one. Literally, verbally with your tongue. Somebody doesn't even prohibit you. Write a letter, for example, the ulama, they say, when the ulama write letters correcting certain individuals, refuting certain individuals, writing books in refutation of certain individuals, those refutations are considered enjoining the good and forbidding the evil by way of their tongue. By way of their tongue. Tamam. And then the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam said that if a person is not able to do that, then he does what? If he can't forbid an evil or enjoin a good physically with your hand, you can't do it with your tongue, then what should you do? What do you have to do? Idris. Hate it in your heart. And that is the weakest of iman. Hate it in your heart. And that is the weakest of iman. Hate it in your heart. Shaykh Abdul Muhsin explained that it is hating for it to have occurred and you wish that it doesn't occur. It ceases to occur. It stops occurring. Tamam. One other point related to this, hating it in the heart, and that is the weakest of iman. Does that now mean that if a person does not have the physical ability to forbid an evil with his hand, and he's unable to forbid an evil even with his tongue, so now he resorts to the least of the lesser of the levels, the lowest of the levels, hating it in your heart. Does that now mean that you are sinning? If you hate something with your heart and you don't forbid an evil with your tongue, with your hand, does that now mean that you are sinful? Huh? Yeah, no doubt you have to leave. But so now you did not have the ability to forbid it with your tongue, with your hand. And you did not have the ability to forbid it with your tongue, both now, hand and tongue. You have hated it in your heart, but the Messenger said, وَذَلِكَ أَضْعَفُ الْإِيمَانِ. That is the weakest of iman. So you are sinful in that regard now, are you? How is it understood? It is... You're a believer, and it's... Well, this is the point that we're trying to get to. Yani some people, they may get confused, saying, it's the weakest part of iman. So you have lost something of iman. As a result of that, your iman has weakened. And therefore you have sinned. La. Ibn al-Rajab, he explains. So if you know that somebody is smoking, and you're still socializing with them, he smokes in front of you. He smokes in your company. Hey, you mean you can't? Yeah. Relationship that should exist between the two of you should be that he has at least respect for you. Respect for you that he's not going to commit those type of... There is some... Because he knows that you're a person of diyana, you're a person of deen, you're a person of religion. He knows that I shouldn't be smoking in front of you, I shouldn't be smoking in front of people in public. If someone's smoking in front of you in public, and in front of you, then you shouldn't have company with that person in that circumstance. If someone's smoking in front of you, you shouldn't have company with him. Advise him. That's the company that you should have with him. So for example, Ya Akhi, you know that I can't chill with you. I can't relax with you. I can't socialize with you. I can't go to the dinners with you. I can't go and travel with you. I can't walk and chill out and relax with you. Why? Because in front of me you're smoking. Person does it in secret. He does it in behind everybody else's back. He smokes in secret. No, he doesn't do it in front of other people. But you are aware of it. Advise him, advise him. Have him in your company if he's not smoking in front of you. Have him in your company, invite him to your house. Have dinner with him. There's no harm in that. You know that he sins, but he does it privately. You're aware of that. You're aware of that, of the fact that he sins. Maybe you spotted him doing it or some khabar reached you. With that type of person, yes, have company with him from the bab of advising him. From the bab of advising him. Even the one that is committing the sins, yani he may smoke in front of you. Obviously, people's situations differ. Person may have just embraced Islam. There is a specific piece of advice that is to be offered concerning specific situations. So this is just general. It's not regarding specific situations. But in general, you may have a circumstance where a person has just become Muslim, or he's just started practicing Islam. So you can't make absolute hajar of him, boycott him and what have you. So every situation has to be looked, right? That type of person, even though he might be smoking in front of you, you might have to still invite him to your house. Have dinner with him and what have you. But you set the rules down. A brother, when you come to the house, you can't be smoking inside of the house, yes? You can't be smoking on my property and what have you. So each situation differs. The general rule of thumb, if somebody you know is smoking and he smokes in your presence, in your company, he has no shyness and shame in committing that sin, then you can't have musahaba with him. You can't have him as your companion, because that will result in him affecting you. That will definitely result in him affecting you. Tamam. Next. The next point is concerning the ayah. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا عَلَيْكُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ لَا يَضُرُّكُمْ مَنْ ضَلَّ إِذَا هَتَدَيْتُمْ. O you who have iman, upon you is yourselves. You're responsible for yourselves. You will not be harmed by those who become misguided if you become guided. How do we understand this ayah? When the Prophet has told us clearly, if you see an evil, change it with your hand. If you can't change it with your tongue, if you can't change it with your heart, then that is the weakest of iman. The point that I was trying to get to. Sorry, before we get to that. The point that I was trying to get to, what Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali rahimahullah ta'ala, this is why I prefer questions at the end. Barakallahu feekum. Not because of any fault of anybody else, fault of myself, I get sidetracked quite easily. So Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali rahimahullah ta'ala, this point about hating it in your heart, and that is the weakest of iman, meaning paraphrasing what he said, relative to the one that is enjoining the evil with his tongue, with his hand, relative to that, then yes, that person's iman is going to be weaker. Or bi'ibaratin ukhra, with another form of expression, the iman that is required for you to enjoin good, forbid evil, physically with your hand, physically with your tongue, is definitely going to be stronger and greater than the iman that is required for you to enjoin the good and forbid the evil with your heart. So it does not mean that if you enjoin the good and forbid the evil just with your heart, that your iman is weak as a totality. That your iman is weak and deficient, and that you're sinful as a totality. Because the only reason why you didn't enjoin the good and forbid the evil with your hand and your tongue was because you didn't have the ability. If you did have the ability, you would have done it. You would have forbidden the evil. You would have forbidden the evil with your tongue and with your hand. So therefore, relative to enjoining the good, and relative to enjoining the good, and forbidding the evil with your tongue and your hand, joining the good with your heart is weaker. Why? Because it requires a stronger amount of iman to enjoin good and forbid the evil with your tongue and with your hands relative to iman. Fahim? Understand, ikhwan? Salaam barakallahu feekum. So this ayah that we quoted earlier, that all you who believe, upon you is yourself. You're responsible for yourselves. You won't be harmed by those who go astray as long as you're guided. So, how do we understand that ayah with the statement of the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam, that whoever amongst you sees an evil, then upon him is to change it with his hand if he has the ability. At the end of the hadith. How do we understand that? After the advice. But isn't Allah saying in the first part of the ayah, عَلَيْكُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ, you're only responsible for yourself. So why do you have to go in and join the good and forbid the... You expand upon that. Yes. And they won't. And likewise, that is part and parcel of what you're responsible for. Allah says, "Alaykum anfusakum." Upon you is to be responsible for yourselves. That is part and parcel of you being responsible for yourself. Why? Because isn't it the case that the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam, he said, min husni islam al-mar'i tarkuhu ma la ya'nihi an amal bil ma'ruf wa nahi anil munkar ya'nika, enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, is it something that ya'nika, is it something that concerns you or does it not concern you? Concerns you. Remember, as we covered before when we studied the hadith, that leaving what does not concern you isn't based upon your hawa. It's not based upon your desires. It's based upon the sharia. So salah does concern you. Siyam in Ramadan does concern you. And part and parcel of what concerns you is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. Part and parcel of those things that are alaykum, that are a burden upon you, a responsibility upon you, is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. And then, that which the brother mentioned, then applies. That after you have done that, after you have fulfilled the first part of the ayah, عَلَيْكُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ, you're responsible for yourselves. If you see an evil, then you have to change it, because it's a command upon you, it's your responsibility. After you've done that, then whoever becomes misguided, then you are not accountable for that. That's not going to harm you at all. Tamam. One point that we wanted to mention as well. One point that we wanted to mention connected to enjoining the good and forbidding the evil is, why is it the case that a person enjoins the good and forbids the evil? Why is it the case that a person, he puts himself in a situation where he may lose respect, people may end up not respecting him anymore, people may end up wanting to intend evil against him, as was the case with the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam. As many of you will know, once you started to become mutadayyin, once you started to become religious, once you started to leave bid'ah and embark upon sunnah and tamassuk bi sunnah, what happened? Darar, harm came to you. Harm maybe from your loved ones, harm from your community, harm from those that were close to you. So harm comes to you. So why does a person then risk losing that respect, risk all of that attack, if it's the case, just for enjoining the good and forbidding the evil? And you say something? Preventing further harm from happening, yes. Sahih. But the point that I'm trying to get at, what's our intention? What's our gharad, our purpose, our goal, our objective behind enjoining the good and forbidding the evil? What are we wanting? And from this, there are many narrations from the Salaf. The reason why they wanted to enjoin good and forbid the evil, because at the end of the day, they loved Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What Allah wants, that is the thing that held the greatest amount of importance in their hearts. And so therefore, establishment of Tawheed, people praying, people fasting, was them establishing the worship of Allah. And they loved that. And thus you'd find some of the Salaf, they would say words to the effect that we would love to be sacrificed, physically sacrificed, so that enjoining of good and forbidding of evil can occur. So that the what Allah loves is established. Meaning we want good for those people. When we enjoin the good, when we forbid the evil, it is not for a gharad nafsi. It is not for a person fulfilling his own selfish desires. It's not for his own self-respect and what have you. Person enjoins good and forbids evil, it's because I want good for other people. I want khair for other people. And in relation to this, we have several statements. We have several statements. Mention two or three statements from Imam Sufyan al-Thawri, Imam Ahmad, wa Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radhiyallahu ta'ala anhu. So the first statement of Sufyan al-Thawri radhiyallahu ta'ala anhu is, and inclusive of this is that a person has hikmah, he has wisdom when he enjoins good and he forbids evil. As we mentioned again and again, a person does not enjoin good and forbid the evil if it's going to cause a greater amount of harm. You see people that they are engaged in an evil deed, likewise them engaging in that evil deed is preventing them from engaging in deeds that are worse than that and more evil than that. If you know that by a people engaging in this evil deed, it's going to preoccupy them from engaging in an evil deed that is worse, killing, murder, and so on and so forth, then in that situation, you have to leave it. Let them do that. Because if you try to stop them from doing that, and they stop it, but then you know that they're going to go and commit murder and what have you, then in that situation, a person, he should refrain. Point being, a person has to have hikmah, wisdom, when he enjoins good and forbids evil. So Sufyan al-Thawri, he said, لا يأمر بالمعروف وينهى عن المنكر إلا من كان فيه خصال ثلاث. A person does not enjoin good and forbid evil except the one that has three traits. Number one, رفيق بما يأمر ورفيق بما ينهى. He is gentle when he orders, and he is gentle when he prohibits. Number two, عدل بما أمر عدل بما ينهى. He's fair and he's just in what he orders, and he's fair and he's just in what he prohibits. Number three, عالم بما يأمر عالم بما ينهى. He has knowledge of what he commands, and he has knowledge of what he prohibits. These are three khisal that Imam Sufyan al-Thawri, he mentioned, indicating that a person, he should have gentleness, and he should have fairness, he should use wisdom, and it's not something that is based upon half-baked knowledge. No, you have basira, you have understanding, insight about the good that you're enjoining and the evil that you're forbidding. So those are three characteristics. Likewise, Imam Ahmad, he said, الناس محتاجون إلى مدارة ورفق الأمر بالمعروف بلا غلظة. He said, people are in need of مدارة. Yeah, this Islamic diplomacy, when you are trying to advise someone, when you're trying to deal with somebody, have this mudara, have this, for lack of better terms, Islamic diplomacy. Use wisdom how you're dealing with them. People are in need of mudara, this Islamic diplomacy, and gentleness in ordering with ma'roof, with goodness. Bila ghilzatin, without coarseness and harshness. إلا رجل معلن بالفسق فلا حرمة له. Except for the person that is open and public with his evil. He's a fasiq. Openly commits the evil in front of everybody. فلا حرمة له. Then there is no honor for him. قال وكان أصحاب ابن مسعود رضي الله تعالى عنه. And again, this differs from era to era, time to time, the land that you live in, the way that you treat a person who's committing major sins in a land of tawheed, where there's ulama, there's talabat al-ilm, in a jami'ah, in an Islamic university. The way that you deal with a fasiq in that environment is different to how you deal with a fasiq in England. You can't deal with a person the same way. So imagine you're in the Islamic University of Medina, and you go into the masjid to pray salah, and there you have a talib al-ilm in front of you, wal-iyadu billah, and he's openly listening to music, or he's smoking. The way that you deal with him is going to be different to how you deal with somebody listening to music and smoking out in public in Bolton. I forgot, I was going to say Burnley. Bolton. It's going to be different. So, hikmah again. What indicates this? This next statement of Ibn Mas'ud. Kana ashabu, or rather, the companions of Ibn Mas'ud. Kana ashabu Ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu ta'ala anhu. إذا مروا بقوم يرون منهم ما يكرهون يقولون مهلا رحمكم الله مهلا رحمكم الله. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu ta'ala anhu, his companions, his students, whenever they would pass by a people that were doing something that wasn't good, that the companions of Ibn Mas'ud, the students of Ibn Mas'ud, disliked. They were doing something of sin and something of wrong. When the students of Ibn Mas'ud would pass by such a people, what would they do? Would they do what those juhal from London and East London were doing? Muslim patrol gangs, putting stickers on lampposts saying this is a Muslim controlled area, going off to kuffar, taking their cigarettes, taking their khamar. If there was a man or a woman walking in public in East London, they would go there and try to separate them. Yani kuffar. And this is what kuffar they were doing. Imagine what they would have done with Muslims. But now look, compare that. And this is in yani Bilad al-Kufr as well, they were doing it. Eh? London. Compare that to the students of Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu ta'ala anhu. They pass by people that are doing something of munkar, they'd say, mahlan, rahimakumullah. Steady, steady, may Allah have mercy upon you. Go easy upon yourselves, may Allah have mercy upon you. Hakadha ikhwan. That is how a person enjoins good and forbids evil. Not like how these Khawarij and these Da'ish and these type of people do. And the last statement of Imam Ahmad, he said, يَأْمُرُ بِالرِّفْقِ وَالْخُضُوعِ فَإِنْ أَسْمَعُوهُ مَا يَكْرَهُ لَا يَغْضَبْ فَيَكُونُ يُرِيدُ يَنْتَصِرْ لِنَفْسِهِ. Imam Ahmad, he said, a person, he enjoins good, he orders, commands with good, forbids evil, he orders with gentleness and humbleness. And if the people end up making him hear what he hates, what he dislikes, meaning if people end up swearing at you, if people end up mocking you, if people end up saying things to you that you don't like, la yaghdab, the person doesn't become angry. You don't become angry. Because then, in that circumstance, you're only wanting يَنْتَصِرْ لِنَفْسِهِ. He's only wanting to defend him own self. He's only there for his own self-respect. His ego overwhelms him. His ego overtakes him. His ego becomes priority now. So a person, when he enjoins good and forbids evil, Imam Ahmad says, he should be soft, gentle, humble. And if people end up saying things to you that you don't like, then don't become angry, because then, in reality, if you become angry just because they swore at you, they've disrespected you, they mocked you, your race, your background, they said go back to where you come from, and so on and so forth, and you become angry at that, then in reality, you're only there, you're showing that you're only there to defend yourself for your own self-respect. So the point being is that the goal and the intent should be wanting good for others, wanting people to be guided, wanting the worship of Allah Jalla wa Ala to be established upon the earth. That is the gharad, that is the purpose behind enjoining good and forbidding the evil. Tamam, those were certain points, important points that needed to be mentioned. For some reason I thought it would only take 10 minutes and that would complete the next hadith, qadr Allah. We'll just mention the summary of the benefits and then inshaAllah ta'ala, hadith number 35 we'll do next week. The summary of the benefits are three. Number one, wujub al-amr bil-ma'roof wa-nahi anil-munkar wa-anna bihi salah al-ibad wal-bilad. The obligation of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. And that by way of that, rectification of people and rectification of the lands is brought about. The lands, the countries is brought about. Number two, أَنَّ تَغْيِيرُ الْمُنْكَرِ يَكُونَ عَلَىٰ دَرَجَاتٍ مَنْ قَدْرَ عَلَىٰ شَيْءٍ مِنْهَا تَعَيِّنَ عَلَيْهِ ذَٰلِكَ. Number two, changing of a munkar has levels. Changing of an evil has levels to it, as we've learned. Whoever is able to carry out one of those levels, then it becomes wajib upon him to enjoin that good or forbid that evil. Number three, التفاوت في الإيمان وأن منه القوي والضعيف والأضعف. Number three, that there is variation in the levels of Iman. Among Iman is that which is strong, among Iman is that which is weak, and among Iman is that which is weaker. So those are the three points of benefit that Shaykh Abdul Muhsin Abbad, he summarizes from this hadith. InshaAllah ta'ala, next week we will look at the hadith about brotherhood, and the etiquettes of brotherhood, and the virtue of loving your brothers for the sake of Allah, and the great crime of doing those things that can harm that brotherhood for the sake of Allah. So inshaAllah ta'ala we'll cover that hadith al-azim next week. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam wa sallallahu ala nabiyyina Muhammad walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.